politicians are remembered by the buildings they leave behind. Canary Wharf, Holyrood, the Dome. Most politicians leave behind no buildings at all, which is, of course, the point. The Master. Ever since the murder of Ella, Davy had felt extremely well. There were no night-time writhings, no black moments, no regrets. He felt cleansed as if he'd been through a scouring icy shower, and the world looked as if it had been freshly rinsed as well. He spoke to Mary and the boys in exactly the same way as before. He missed Ella not at all. The only cloud on his bright horizon was the distant possibility of a police investigation and of him being questioned. In retrospect, of course, he and Ella might have been seen together and remembered on the Vaporetto having a coffee at Burano, who knows. Everybody has a camera in their pocket these days. Perhaps the old woman who shook her head at him had seen something after all. And yet, on balance, Davy thought not. He'd had a great triumph in the department, and he was still luxuriating in it. Political success was as instantly warming and reassuring as heroin in the blood vessels. Even Bunty had gone quiet. She made no impertinent comments. She asked no awkward questions. She just seemed pleased to have seen the back of Ella. And she managed Davy's constituency business with calm efficiency. He had to give her that. When Mary and the boys came to London, Bunty showed an almost maternal side. She fixed tickets to musicals and told the boys where the best burgers were to be had. When he moved into the Secretary of State's spacious office, she didn't replace the imperturbable private secretary Moira he had inherited, but the two women appeared to get on and they worked well together. So it was no particular surprise when, during one of his Monday morning planning sessions, Bunty appeared in his office with a buff envelope and a serious expression. This was by far Davy's favourite time of the week. With the departmental planning officer, his architectural adviser and the permanent secretary, he was contemplating a beautifully constructed three-dimensional model of the new city he planned to raise in Somerset. Perspex buildings on tiny perspex piles rose above a rippling, coloured landscape which showed the positions of the existing buildings and of the new canals that would end the problem of flooding forever. 3D printers allow the department to visualise the entirely new landscape, while simultaneously costing the acquisition of the land and the provision of new rail, road and water links. Davy had insisted that there would be a grand canal twisting through the centre of the city, with water frontages more ornate and beautiful than anything that had been built in England since the Edwardians. Every Monday there were new additions. Private contractors brought in suggestions all week. Large computer screens showed visualizations of individual buildings and of the views along the canals or across the piazzas. Davy had banned the use of squares. Sunlight fell across the beautiful model. The permanent secretary had just brought some good news. One of the larger farmers was prepared to sell up at a very decent price in return for a canal-side mansion, which he wanted the king's favourite architect to design for him. Everyone would win, the department, the former farmer, and the flattered monarch. Bunty tugged at Davy's elbow.
"It's free more. Dinny fash, it's no about the hour."
The permanent secretary smiled and raised his eyebrows. Not for the first time, Davy thanked his lucky stars that nobody in the department understood a word of Scots. Bunty passed him the envelope.
"Go on, bugger lugs, open it then."
Inside there was a single coloured photograph. It showed an elderly man wearing a grey jacket and a military cap, crouched down and staring at an architectural model of a town.
"Kinna bumpot?"
"Of course. It's Lintz. And him."
"Aye, Hitler. It's Moore's way of telling you you've lost the head." "Doon for. Away with the fucking fairies, boss."
By now everyone else in the room was looking concerned. Flushing, Davy ordered them all out.
"It's a constituency matter that Bunty here has drawn to my attention. Can you give us a few moments?"
"No, really, Bunty," he began when they were alone. "Aye, you're a busy man. No time for a wee bit girl who didn't go to the college. But see here, Mr. Petrie, Mamma is a very bright woman, and she's been keeping a close interest. You'd be surprised. And she's not the only one. My man suggested I come and have a wee talk with you. Moore likes all the new houses you're building for working folks down south, just like you built them in Glaycat all those years. And Moore and the Hale party back home are dead chuffy how fast you've scampered up the greasy pole. Like a damn little monkey, she says. They're no so pleased with how you treated Mary and the boys, mind. But they don't ken a thing. Maybe enough said."
"No, she says you couldn't have done it without powerful friends. Murdoch White and New Labour and all that crowd. Good for you. Politics, Ma says, is about power and how to get it. But there's the rub, Mr. Petrie. Abody kens the birds in the trees more the dumbest old council is even daft wee Bunty, even her man. Abody kens that the maester has eyes only for Caroline Phillips. She's who he wants his wee next Prime Minister. That's no great. Ma says Caroline Phillips will do anything. She'll sign up with the Yanks and all the maester's business friends. She says, begging your pardon, Mr. Petrie, that you're no the brightest bulb in the set, but you're honest and you got values and you'll stick up for the rest of us. But meanwhile, there you are in the bunker staring at little models while the world changes around you. So the message is this. Forget about your bloody houses for a minute or two and get back to bloody work. You've got a fight on your hands, whether you want it or not."
Davy was staggered. Not by Bunty's unaccustomed eloquence, he'd figured out long ago that she was entirely formidable, nor by the message she brought. Ever since Grimaldi had announced his imminent resignation, cabinet gossip had been hot for either Caroline Phillips or him, and he was well aware that he was continuing to act as a departmental minister, not as a man campaigning for the highest office. The truth was, he hoped and believed that the party would go for substance, not for the grand, airy-fairy guff Caroline was spouting. All those fancy companies, all that capering around with captains of industry. It was like triangulation and the third way and one nation. All the trite catchphrases that impressed Westminster commentators and left the rest of the country stony-faced. But perhaps he was wrong. Private Eye had just carried a very subtle insinuation that the master and Caroline Phillips were more than merely tutor and pupil. He didn't quite believe that, either. No, what had staggered him was Bunty's cool insolence in coming in and lecturing him. Did the votes of the Glaycat electorate, his rapid rise through the ranks in Parliament, the flattering profiles in the press, the television appearances, and the policy breakthroughs mean nothing at all? Did she think he was stupid? And worse, if he had no idea what was going on in that girl's head, perhaps he really was stupid. Perhaps he didn't understand the first thing about what was going on. At any rate, she was right about one thing. He had to pull himself together. He had to ready himself for the fight. "Thank you, Bunty. You've been very candid. Just one thing. This man of yours?"
"Aye, an older fellow, and on the other side.
For Christ's sake, didn't he tell more?
But he's got his head screwed on. And like he says, he keeps his ear to the ground."
"And this older fellow, does he also hear what your mother's been hearing? What does he say about it?"
"He says what he always says. Quite concur."
To Glaycat and back.